Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. I'm going to begin today's show by reading just a couple of lines from the beginning, from the introduction of my guest's book. She says, "We all like to think we're prepared for the unexpected. When it comes to our professional self-image, most of us strive to be adaptable, collaborative, and resilient. Yet in my work as an executive coach, I've listened to many people describe professional situations where they're caught off guard and discovered that their reactions under pressure surprised them." Well, this is a great book. I've read it cover to cover. It's called Lifeboat, Navigating Unexpected Career Change and Disruption, packed full of really great insights. But I love also the theme that runs through the book, and you'll hear more about that in just a moment. Let me tell you about my guest. She is Maggie Craddock. She's a veteran executive coach known for her work with Fortune 500 CEOs and senior management. She's also a certified therapist and the author of The Authentic Career and Power Genes. And you can find out more about her at workplacerelationships.com. So let me bring her on. Lifeboat is the name of the book. Maggie Craddock, my guest. Well, Maggie Craddock, I want to welcome you to the show. And I have to say, is this book ever timely? I know you wrote this pre-COVID because of the time it takes to write and the time it takes to get published and released, but it could not be a better timing, right?
It's been uncanny. And I'll tell you, Vicki, I would not have wished for the conditions that we're in now, but since we seem to be in them, the timing has been extraordinary.
Yeah. Well, it sounds, I want to just share a little bit of your background with our listeners, because it sounds as though you'd built yourself what many would call the ideal career. And many people go through this. And I think with the situation we're in right now with COVID and the economic situation and people losing jobs, many people are kind of reassessing, you know, was I where I needed to be? And when we have a new normal, do I want to go back to that? And you write in the book that you were an award-winning portfolio manager for a Wall Street investment firm. Very fast-paced environment, obviously. You were making critical decisions every day. But you went home every night feeling what?
Well, you know, I went home often feeling a little bit drained. I can tell you one evening I went home and just put my key in the lock and turned it and went through the door and collapsed on the sofa. And I literally was just, I felt like I'd worn home other people's feelings, like a dress that didn't fit me, Vicki. And then I suddenly realized it's not just what we're doing independently. It's the emotional energy that we take from the environment that we're in that impacts our sense of self and the possibilities we can envision for ourselves, and not just our standard of living, but our standard of being in so many ways, right? So where we invest our time and energy in our careers is vital, not just to the amount of money that we make, but to our life satisfaction and our ability to realize our full ambitions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I could certainly relate to a lot of what you're talking about yourself, because I was in the, and I still am to some extent in the corporate culture, but I was deeply embedded in the corporate culture too. And all of a sudden it's like something has to change. This isn't where I want to be anymore. And so you realize you have to change your mindset. You know, it's disappointing, I think, when you've worked so hard to get somewhere and then think, you know, this isn't where I need to be or want to be anymore. But you have to get over that disappointment, obviously. You have to change your mindset. What challenges did you run into personally to shift that mindset at that point?
For me, I don't know that it was as big a challenge. The big challenges came for me after I had made the shift, because I worked pretty hard to be realistic about saving the amount of money I would need to reinvent myself. And that's one thing I would advise your listeners to think about. You want to start making your plans in terms of career change sometimes before you leave the job you're in, you want to make it a smooth transition if that's possible. I know for people nowadays, sometimes that's not always possible, like they're reinventing now, you know, because things are changing around us in so many levels, it's extraordinary. But the other thing is I challenge people to be very thoughtful about the amount of money they need to cover their living expenses. You know, there's some people that hang on to a certain job because their sense of identity is fused potentially with being able to say, this is the role, this is what I'm doing. Maybe they're doing something that, you know, their family members or even their parents or teachers along the way suggested would be a great idea for them. But, you know, it doesn't feel authentic for them anymore, especially the way things are going.
Right.
But oftentimes, if you're realistic with yourself and you look at the emotions underneath how you feel about the amount of money you have, I mean, is it something that makes you feel safe in an unsafe world? What really are your expenses? You find that you might have to do some belt tightening, but in the long run, if you look at your, you know, your transitive skills, what you know that you could move from one job to another, you're often able to make a change, and although you have to course correct a little bit to do it, you end up realizing more of your long-term professional goals if you take a meaningful risk on your own behalf.
Yeah. Well, you share some great tips, some great advice in your book, Lifeboat, Navigating Unexpected Career Change and Disruption. And we certainly are going through major disruption on all levels right now. So let's talk a little bit about the theme of the book, because at first I was thought, okay, the Titanic, you know, that story has been done so many times. And then I got so engrossed in the story, Maggie, that I couldn't put it down for a while. And I learned all kinds of things that I never knew about the Titanic. And I love how you took this this story and relayed it to the work that you're doing with your clients. So let's talk a little bit about how you came up with that foundation for the book, The Titanic.
Well, you know, I think that when we talk about the story of the Titanic, what's really useful to our careers, Vicki, is that so many of us, at a human level, are grappling with some of the same changes when we look at what's going on in our lives and our careers and all these different norms that the Titanic survivors were facing. And these are very human questions, like, you know, how long will this situation last? How bad will it get? Who can I trust, really, to help me through this?
Big one.
Big one. And I think what's really important for your listeners is how will this situation, right? Because when we look back on our careers, we're going to realize that right now we're navigating one of the most extraordinary disruptions in history that many of us will face. And, you know, whether we're leaders in organizations or we're just trying to figure out the next step with our job, we're going to look back and say, how did I get through this period and how did this period change me? And the lessons that we learn from these Titanic survivors really go to a very simple truth. When you're dealing with extraordinary change and disruption, it's not any one choice you make, right? It's having confidence in your decision-making process, because things are changing around you all the time. And I think one of the easiest ways to put this into perspective for people, and this is what I tried to do with all the 8 questions in Lifeboat, and we can go through any of those you want to, Vicki.
Yes.
Just have your readers bear in mind the difference between what I call the big ship mindset, right, and the lifeboat mindset. I go into that a lot in the book and keep coming back to how it applies to people's jobs.
Right. Well, that's going to be my next question. I wanted to kind of transition into big ship mindset because I think it's important we understand that.
Well, the big ship mindset, and one thing I'd like your readers to bear in mind is this has nothing to do with the size of a firm you're working for, because there are big multinational firms around the world whose senior management teams are trying to embrace a lifeboat mindset. What the big ship mindset deals with is it's a mindset rooted in old norms, in what has worked in the past, and in stretching those ideas about what worked in the past to their optimistic limit. So one thing we note in the book is that the problems that took down the Titanic obviously started before they were out on the water looking at any of the icebergs. It started when they were cutting corners building the ship. They didn't have enough lifeboats. They were minimizing safety precautions, and they were going through those icy waters of the Atlantic a lot more quickly than they needed to. because the whole attitude really was impression management, larger than life, you know. And sort of what came from that were some norms along the way that encouraged people, you know, always play your part, keep your game face on, right, no matter what. You know, for many of us in the workplace, this game face, these old norms are always stay busy and faster is better. And, of course, as we all know, faster is not necessarily better. When you're overlooking things that you need to do to take care of your clients, to take care of your family, so many things are changing, right?
Right, right. And this corporate culture, the big mind ship mindset that you talk about, and you say it doesn't apply just to big companies, it also doesn't just apply to traditional companies. I've worked with very new digital startups, and they still carry forward that same kind of thinking in many ways. All of this stuff you talk about, I mean, you say, you know, we suppress our feelings, we suppress our authentic self basically to fit in, including our natural intuition. We kind of go along to get along on many levels. And it's very damaging, not just to the organization, but to ourselves individually. And I found in many cases with people I've worked with, and even myself, I went through a period where I experienced extreme burnout because you're constantly being someone you're not. So I'm sure you run into that with clients. How do you help them through that?
Well, you know, what we talk about, if we talk about making this shift to more of the lifeboat mindset, okay, we'll talk about being in a situation where there are more questions than answers, right? And we're facing this. And burnout brings us right to the center of this, just as you say, Vicki. And, you know, we go back to the story because I think stories help us take a step back and see things sometimes that we're too close to put into perspective. You know, one thing I've found under pressure is that there's a tension in a lot of people between part of them that would really like more self-awareness and maybe, you know, even more personal evolution, if you will, or more authenticity, and the part of them that's just driven by such a sense of urgency and would really prefer not to know about themselves, right?
Right.
The story gives you a little room to take that in.
Right.
So if you think about this big ship mindset, and then you contrast what we're talking about with the lifeboat mindset, it's helpful to picture what it was actually like at a human level for people to be on this giant ship that many people thought was unthinkable, as we know it's not the case, but that's how it was billed in the press in some cases. And now they're huddled together in these tiny watercraft fighting for their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
How they're going to get through this thing in the dark. And so when you get to the human shift here, it's about being in the present moment, right, but at a very human level, because so many of us in business are kind of transactional in our thinking when it's business as usual, and you can't be in the midst of this kind of crisis. The human side of things, giving people the benefit of the doubt, realizing how they and their families are doing as human beings as they're trying to work remotely, right? And then I think a central piece of this, when I'm dealing with burnout with people, is really training them to take this strategic pause until it's emotional muscle memory, because this is where we give ourselves away, Vicki. And people think, boy, if I tap into my feelings, if I get in touch with how frustrated or how resentful or how exhausted I am, I'm just going to go down. It's not the case. The case is that we can train ourselves to tap into that, because this is emotional wisdom we may need to tap into to course correct if that's the situation. We don't want to deny things. But there's a lot of work in the book that helps people take these focused strategic pauses so that you can really be aware of what you're feeling, be present with that objectively, even in the middle of a very difficult meeting. Some of those case examples show us how empowering this can be, right?
Yeah.
Still not let that sink our ship. Not let that capsize us. We think we're going to go down if we stop rushing around and feel our feelings and really get in touch with ourselves authentically. It's not the case. What's going to happen is we're going to retrain ourselves to align our thoughts, our feelings, and our intentions in the present moment. And that's where we don't have to have the solution all at once. We can identify positive actions that keep us on course. And when we do that, we don't have to think our way to greatness. Sometimes greatness just finds us because we're doing the next constructive thing, one relationship, one opportunity, one moment at a time.
Yeah, definitely. And I do want to run through the 8 questions of the lifeboat process. You know, once we've got that mindset of expect the unexpected, and there's so much uncertainty right now that, you know, even if people do have work, they're not sure if they'll have it maybe next month or in 2 months or even next week. Number one is the ship safe? So we need to do a quick assessment of is the ship safe?
Well, and you know, I think that's a starting point for us all, particularly if we're wondering if we should continue to just hang in there in the job we have, or if we should be rethinking things, or even if we should be the one that takes a step back and shoulders more of the home responsibilities and our spouse, you know, what's going on with 2 career couples. So when we address this question, Vicki, is the ship safe? It's important to think about things in 2 ways. One, you want to think about any organization that you would be working for, both as a corporate community, right, and as a financial enterprise. So, you know, in practical terms, when you think about a firm as a financial enterprise, you want to make sure that, you know, they're budgeting appropriately, that senior management is, you know, relatively clear about their position in the industry, they can course correct when necessary. But when you think about it as in light of what we were talking about with emotional energy and satisfaction, you really want to think about things like, does the group energy of this organization support norms that strengthen your sense of self and foster a sense of mutual respect among people? Because that will really impact the energy level you need to keep going on all levels in your career and in your life.
Yeah, very important point. So if we step 2 and step 3, what do we do if we sense trouble? And I remember I worked at a media agency, and I could tell when they were going to do layoffs because there were loads of closed-door meetings when those doors were usually open, and there was a tension in the air, if you will. But that was quite a small company. If you're in a bigger company, I think it's a little less obvious. So what do I do if I sense trouble? And number 3, when do I know it's time to get into that lifeboat?
Well, you know, putting these 2 together, and I think they sort of do go together, I'm going to take them in the other order. I'm going to say, when is it time to get in a lifeboat first, okay?
Yeah.
And that is, I always encourage people to do their inner work before they get impulsive about their outer decisions. Because, you know, when it's business as usual, most of us are pretty objective, kind of level-headed, hopefully strategic, right? But when we're under extraordinary pressure, and we are in this period of unprecedented change all around us, our thinking can become polarized, and we can become prone to snap judgment. And that's precisely what the lifeboat process is meant to help you avoid, okay? So if you're in a difficult situation right now in the workplace and you're not really sure about all of this, you want to make sure that you're doing your internal work and you're aligning your thoughts and feelings and actions and thinking from what we call the us-help mindset as you approach some of these challenges first. Now here, and I go through this in a couple of sections in the book, is where you definitely need to think about making a change. If your physical health is compromised by what you're going through, and of course in the COVID environment, this is just a tragic situation many of us have to think about. If your emotional health is under pressure, if you're struggling with depression, anxiety, you can't sleep, things like this, and also, and I think this is extraordinarily important when we're working from home, if your key relationships with people that are vital to your quality of life, your kids, your spouse, your relatives, are coming under undue strain because of your work, then you need to think about making a change. These are what I call the red flag moment. Mm. However, right?
Yeah.
However, barring those things, it may be time to look internally, right, about the narrative we're creating for ourselves in a tense situation. Are we truly giving other people the benefit of the doubt, or do we have one of those inner icebergs I write about in the book? And are we approaching a situation, and there are a lot of case studies in the book where people work through this, where we can do some inner work to strengthen ourselves authentically and realize that we may be able to navigate this situation if we're taking that lifeboat mentality through. And you see so many examples of people who do this in the book in the corporate world, as well as Margaret Brown on lifeboat number 6, right?
Yeah.
So many people do this. and they really become informal leaders, if you will. I mean, even people who work for bosses who would be somewhat, we would consider bullies, people who sort of emotionally erase you in the process of a tense day, right? You can see how this internal alignment makes it possible for people to negotiate conflict in a way that fortifies their personal integrity rather than diminishing it, and in a very subtle but empowering way for everyone. They can shift the tone in a meeting and sometimes in a culture in such a way that the entire thing becomes more reflective of the upheld mindset, more reflective of the lifeboat mentality. So I'm always saying to people, do the inner work first, right? And if you've done the inner work and you realize that that you're in a situation that's so extraordinarily dysfunctional, you're seeing resources wasted, senior management lining their own pockets, people who are not acting in accord with their stated values.
Yeah, we see that every day. I mean, that's not going to go away. I think it's something that's gotten worse, it seems, over the last year or two. I want to just talk a little bit about Margaret Brown, because you mentioned the unsinkable Molly Brown. I didn't actually equate the unsinkable Molly Brown with this story until I read your book. But there are some great lessons in that, you know, how to find inner strength during a crisis. And she was in Lifeboat 6, as you said. She became the leader, not at all your stereotypical hero, but the two people that maybe we thought should have been leaders, they basically froze. They argued and froze. So what lessons can we take away from that story?
Oh, I think that's one of my favorite parts. Obviously, it's one of my favorite parts of the Titanic story because I've emphasized it several times. But yes, Margaret Brown was one of a large body of women on Lifeboat Number 6, and there were really basically only three guys, right? Frederick Fleet, who was the lookout, Robert Hitchens, who was supposed to be in command of the lifeboat and was relatively underwhelming at his post, right?
Yeah.
Arthur Pushin, who got in a power struggle with him. And so Margaret Brown was a gracefully aging grandmother from first class, and the only reason she was on the Titanic in the first place was to try to get to the bedside of her sick grandson. So she's plopped into this lifeboat with some other women from first class and then some people from steerage as well. And at first she's just, you know, tuning out this power struggle, as many of us would, thinking, look, you know, they've got this, right? Because they've got their norms. They're the passengers. These other guys are the naval experts. They're supposed to get them through this. That's ending in tears, right? And suddenly she sits there, observes this, and with a true modeling of the lifeboat mentality, she looks around and thinks, well, what can I do? And she notices at a very human level that a lot of people around her are shivering and cold. And being one of these people from first class, she's taking off a fur here, a piece of clothing there, helping, adding words of comfort. She's noticing some of the women that she's been riding in first class with are becoming very agitated because they're used to things going smoothly and things are not going smoothly, right? And then she notices something really visionary. She realizes that one reason that Robert Hitchens is just basically breaking down is he's saying we're all doomed because there's all these women and none of them are strong enough physically to pull an oar through the water. And she suddenly realizes, well, hey, you know, if we organize them two to an oar and get a rhythm here, right, we will be strong enough and we'll be unified and it'll give us something that'll, you know, keep us warm and help us survive and at least we'll start moving. At that point, Robert Hitchens, who's all caught up in the big ship authority of his previous role, even though he isn't executing it well at all, tries to shut her down, and that's where it becomes really dramatic. That's where she finds this wave of energy in herself, and by being agile enough to be in the present moment and really align those thoughts, those feelings, and those intentions, she stands up among those passengers and summons this energy I doubt she even knew she had before this moment. And she's the one who shuts him down. She creates such a wave of positive energy that everyone on the ship, on this little lifeboat, backed her, including the other two guys. And by the time they're rescued, everyone on the lifeboat is calling her really the force that saved them all. But again, she doesn't do it because she's had the formal training. She doesn't do it because she got the title, and she didn't want to be in any kind of naval career. She did it simply by being present, by realizing that if she was feeling it, other people were probably feeling something similar and reaching out at a human level. And she did it by solving problems in the present. In a situation where there were so many more questions than answers, she just did what was right in front of her as practically and positively as she could.
Yeah, I love that story, and I'm glad you shared that with us. It just shows that a little bit of common sense and letting go of ego goes a long, long way, right? I want to talk, we only have a few minutes left here, Maggie, but I do want to talk about trust. So I'm going to skip to the 8 questions. This is number 6, who can I trust in crisis? And you talk a lot about trust in the book and how a lack of trust not only diminishes our working relationships, but it diminishes the trust we have in ourselves. And I think that's really key. So just share a couple of thoughts around trust, if you would.
I would be delighted to. I think it's one of the central themes we need to think about, particularly this environment. And I talk to people about the fact that there's some things you cannot do alone in life. One of them is row a lifeboat through the icy waters of the Atlantic, and the other one is really understand and grasp things you might have preferred not to know about yourself or minimize about your own reactions under pressure so that you can course correct. And that's why I talk about lifeboat feedback. It's not just feedback from people that you feel will be emotionally honest enough not to just say what you want to hear, but tell you what you might need to hear, and people whose perspective you respect. These could be people that you may have worked with at a previous firm. They could be friends you had from college. They could be people you know in a professional networking group. Some people it could be a best friend or even their spouse. But getting this feedback, not just about what we should do in a situation, like should I leave this job and take another one, or should I take a step back from my career, should I hire this person or that person, but feedback in such a way that we can describe a challenge and without trying to give us advice about what we should do with one particular decision. We've got someone who will listen to whether or not we are being true to ourselves under pressure. That kind of feedback helps us build trust in ourselves. They will address questions like, you know, do I sound like I'm being emotionally honest, or are there feelings I may be suppressing and trying to avoid, or do I sound like my motives are clear here? Is there something I'm not seeing? Or am I really being fair to a person that I seem to be having difficulty with? Or am I making a snap judgment here based on something they've done? People that will help us remain true to ourselves under pressure and give us the feedback we need to maintain that internal alignment, because, of course, as the challenges and the new information keeps flooding in, we keep having to recenter in the present moment, right?
Right.
So that lifeboat approach to feedback goes to the tone we set in conversations with others, where the objective is to have confidence in our own decision-making process and build the ability to trust ourselves. And when you have those conversations, it creates a tone that's contagious. You know, people have told me, gosh, Maggie, when someone reaches out to me for this kind of feedback, I feel so grateful, because after I've gotten off the phone, I feel more empowered myself. And Vicki, I think what we all need to do is to learn to just stop, take those strategic pauses, be true to ourselves under pressure, and make sure in an environment where everything is changing and some of the information sources are, you know, in the gray zone right now, we want to be sure that we are truly listening to our own thought process and we are aligning with our authentic values. Most important thing for your listeners, when you are looking for an organization where you think you're going to thrive, find one that reinforces your core values and know what those values are.
It's so important, because usually corporations today have a cultural officer. If you have to go through one of those all-day interviews, you usually end up meeting with a cultural officer. They have their culture, so it's equally important that you feel good about that culture. So the book is called Lifeboat, Navigating Unexpected Career Change and Disruption. And I have this as a website for you, Maggie, workplacerelationships.com. Is that the best website for listeners to go to?
The best website.
Okay. Yes. So workplacerelationships.com. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Maggie?
I would say that for people who are tuning in to this wonderful conversation, Vicki, I love what you do with these broadcasts. Know that if you're seeking this kind of information, we need you. We need you to find your authentic center. We need you to navigate this period. We all need you out there being authentic, thinking for yourself, and thriving. So I wish each and every person who's listening the very best.
Well, Maggie Craddock, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for sharing some of your insights with us. Lots more in the book. I really enjoyed reading it.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure, Vicky.
And the book again is Lifeboat, Navigating Unexpected Career Change and Disruption. And I want to thank each of you for joining us today. Thanks for listening in. You can find us at conversationslive.net, and we'll be back next week with an all-new conversation. Until then, stay healthy, stay strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.